Decision number 21628, Rule 5.
Fred Hawkins, Reel 5.
Yeah. They were doing, the Americans had come to a halt at Casino because of the atrocious weather, and it was really atrocious. We moved to a position in a wadi called Wadi Portela. It was a very deep-sided wadi. On one side, if you climbed to the top and looked over, or peered over, we could see Casino, some Casino town, but we could see the monastery. Beautiful sight. On the other side of the wadi, there was a road running round, nearly at the top. There were sort of parapets as you go up the sides of the wadi, and we got our bivouacs, and we had a casualty there. The first casualty, as far as I know. The private Bill Cole, he was our platoon runner. And the elderly, he was older than me, but a George Middleton, who lived down at South End, and myself, we were in one bivvy. This Bill Cole and the platoon signaller, by the name of Felsted, they were in the other bivvy. But we'd got, both bivvies were tied to a single sapling here, so our bibby was tied there, and their bibby was there, so it was only a matter of 4 foot, 5 foot apart, something like that. And they were shelling, and we knew this shell had landed very close, and after the shelling had died down, I called out, I said, "You're right, Ali." We used to call him Ali, it was Albert, his name was, really, Albert Felsted, and he said, "Yes." He said, "That was close." I said, "Yeah, too close." I said, "Bill all right?" He said, "Well, I don't know. I can't find him." He said, "I can't find his head." And apparently a bit of shrapnel had killed him, and this Bill Cole. He was, as far as I know, was our first casualty.
You mean it had decapitated him?
Yeah, more or less. Mm. On the other side of the wadi, there was an Italian truck carrying civilians there. What happened, we don't know, but that tipped over, or tipped these civilians out, and they come tumbling down the side of the wadi, down the slope. And a lot of our chaps, and Major General, Major Beckett, it was then, Major General now, he helped rescue some of these civilians that were caught up in the boulders and the bushes. While we were there, seven brigade of the 4th Indian Division, they were given the task of taking Snake's Head Ridge. That was a very, very main feature at the Casino. They were given to understand that the Americans had taken a position near there, which was going to be their start line, the Royal Sussex and the 7th Brigade start line. The 7th Brigade, they got the 1st Battalion Royal Sussex, 2nd Gurkhas, I think it was, and the 14th, 15th Punjabis. We had the Essex, the 1st, 9th Gurkhas, and the 4th, 6th Rajputana Rifles, Then 11th Brigade, the other brigade in the division, was the Camerons, the Rajputs, and the, I think it was the second Gurkhas. So we had a Gurkha battalion in each brigade. When the Sussex got up there, they realised that the Americans hadn't got the point that they were supposed to have had. That wasn't in their possession. They said they were on the feature, but they weren't. The Sussex tried to get that. That was supposed to be their start line. So they had to try and capture the start line first. They were in this position, and it never materialised. Some of the Americans, they had to lift out of the holes because they were frozen in the holes there. The weather was atrocious, it really was. So we hadn't been in action up to that time. When they realised that 7th Brigade could not carry out their attack successfully, they decided that they would bomb the monastery. And we got notified that on the following morning, if we climbed up to the banks of this wadi and peered over the top, we would see the monastery bombed, which is what we'd done. And well, it was a lovely bright morning, and if Casino, the monastery was there, and I heard the planes coming from that direction, and it always reminds me of always describe it as silver walnuts dropping from the sky, and it was, the sun was glistening on these bombs as they just caught a glistening in the sky, and then these bombs crushed down onto the monastery. And when the smoke and dust had cleared, because you saw the smoke and the dust rise, but you heard the explosion more or less just afterwards, and it's an unbelievable sight, really, to see a building standing there and then blink your eyes a couple of times and realise you imagine you're not looking in the same direction, but you are. It's just obliterated. We all knew that was going to be bombed. The 7th Brigade knew that was going to be bombed, but they didn't tell them when. And one of the bombs, or maybe more than one, dropped behind, and they lost nearly a company of Punjabis. 416 Punjabis. There was quite a few of them who were casualties. And I got told this by a gentleman I met on a sapper course. I went up to on a sapper course up at London, and this gentleman, he saw I was wearing a 4th Indian Division tie, and he said, what was you in? I told him, and then he told me who he was, and he sent me some photographs of the area, because he went back after the war, and he's got some photographs of the area where the Punjabis were.
Was he with the Punjabis?
Big pardon?
Was he with the Punjabis?
He was with them. He was one of the company commanders. Mm. That was a bad fault. Then they decided that we would move. We moved from Wadi Patala, because we went up there in the dark. We come away in the dark, so we didn't really know what direction we'd come from, really. We moved up and into another wadi called Wadi Villa. Now, this was just below the monastery, the castle at Casino. This was the little village of Kyra there. And what made it so bad on our part was the fact that Mount Kyra was one of the highest peaks in the area. And they, an OP, a German OP up there, could look over the whole of the Leary Valley and see every movement there was. So there was as little movement in daytime as possible. Even while we was in Wadi Villa, we had a number of casualties because the Nebelwerfers reached us there. These six-barreled German mortars. Eventually, they they gave the orders for the battalion to carry out the attack. But then the rains came, and with it, the snow on the hills mounted, and the water come rushing down, and we were in a, well, George Middleton and myself, we were in a dugout on top of the bank of the river. A lot of the chaps made their dugout in the river. But when the rains came, they just got washed away. They lost their blankets, they lost their brain guns, mortars were carried away in a rush of water. We had one deserter there, I know. But we had quite a few casualties in that area. The regimental aid post wasn't far away, fortunately.
What can you tell me about the deserter?
He just disappeared.
Do you know him?
Well, I suppose I could say a name, but...
Don't need to mention his name.
Rather not.
No need to mention his name.
No.
Was he known to you?
I never seen him over. We laid in this body for 3 weeks, and it was so bad they even gave us a tot of rum. First time I'd ever had it. But by the time we'd laid in this water and got wet and been shelled for 3 weeks, you didn't really feel like making any attack. But eventually the order come, the code word was Bradman Bats Today. That was the code word for the attack on the castle and the monastery. And we'd all been given details of what action to take. Because the rain kept on for 3 weeks, so this code word wasn't released. But eventually it was released, and we knew we was going to go to the attack. That same morning, they bombed Casino Town itself. We heard all this crashing of bombing that had been going on. We left Wadi Villa for our base. I think it was around about 5 o'clock or somewhere around about that time. It was getting dark. We had to follow the road down until we come to the edge of Casino Town. We went through the one corner of it, and we come to a point at the base of this hill, which was, we found out, Castle Hill. Now, there's New Zealanders. During the afternoon, they had captured the castle, and their troops were still in it. Our instructions were that we would relieve them, and that was to be A and B Company were supposed to go up, A and C Company was supposed to go up, take over from the New Zealanders in the castle, once that had taken place, B and D Company of the battalion would follow on, and once they reached the castle, it was our orders then were to leave the castle, go down the slope, and run up Monastery Hill and capture the monastery. That was the plan. We had a Lieutenant Candler for our platoon commander. He lives at Norfolk now. And he was in front of me when we was coming up. I think Major Kettley, our company commander at the time, was leading. And 9 platoon, which was my platoon, were following on. Little did I know, not then, that Lieutenant Candler had been wounded. The New Zealanders, the engineers, they'd laid white tapes up the castle hill, and the idea was that we would follow these white tapes up the castle hill. Otherwise, climbing up this hill in the dark, going through the bushes and shrubs and boulders, you went to go forward and really you just kicked against a boulder, so you went one side or the other, but you'd only got to do that 2 or 3 times and you more or less lost sense of direction. The only time you would see anything is when the guns were flashing, and we were being fired on all the time by the German infantry. They knew there was something going on. We eventually got into the castle, and the New Zealand, I think he was a sergeant, he pointed to a position where he'd been, so we took up that position. And everybody else who was around, they took up a position when they found a dugout or a hole in the castle itself. It was a terrible climb. It was raining. And when you climb a hill such as that, and you go to get hold of it, put your hand out and you find it's a thorn bush, black thorn bush or something of that nature, or a rock in front of you, you've got to deviate and try and get round it somehow. But eventually we got, well, say halfway up. We had some casualties, and the firing was such that there were some snipers had got a line on the area, German snipers. Thus, C Company took over the lead from us, and they carried on up into the castle. We eventually got up there, and as I say, we took over the dugout that this New Zealand NCO had been in, and we didn't know whether all our people were up there or what had happened, really. And so the only time you see anything is when the gun flashes lit up. In the morning, you see heads here and there, and you say, oh, he's up here all right, and one or two more, but you couldn't see everybody because they was all in different positions, and some were just outside the castle walls and some were in. The plan of B and D relieving us and us to go up to the monastery, that never materialised because we were short in numbers then. We had casualties. And the German firing was continuous. Mortar and machine gun and artillery fire. It was Major Beckett out of C Company. He was the only officer left. Our company commander, Major Kettley, he got killed by a sniper in the morning. And this was the 15th of March this took place, when we went up to the castle. Major Kettley's Batman, the chap from Burnham, Fred Thomas, he had a wound on his head, a slight wound. The sniper's bullet pierced his steel helmet and that just grazed the top of his head. He was lucky, but he got Major Kettley. So he lost one company commander right away. My company, platoon commander, I didn't know what had happened to him. 7th platoon and 8th platoon, they'd still got their officers. And they'd all took up positions in and around the castle walls. When they realised that A and C were in no state to carry on and make an attack on the monastery, they suggested B and D Company do the job. No sooner had B and D Company come through us, gone through the hole in the wall in the castle, and got outside the walls, and we're going down the slope to come up the other side, when a German counterattack come in. And some of B and D Company went forward, carried on, and some come back into the castle. Some of B and D eventually made their way to Hangman's Hill, which had been the 1st 9th Gurkhas target. And Jay joined the Gurkhas on Hangman's Hill. There was a number of these attacks come in the following day or so. And I think it was on March the 19th was the first day, because I'm not sure whether it was an anti-tank shell or a German shell that blew a section of the castle wall down. And it buried about 11 or 12 of A Company. Lieutenant Ulf, who was 7th Platoon commander, he was the one who was A Company. He was the one who saw my platoon commander down the bottom of the hill. I found this out afterwards. And he said to him, "What's the matter with you, Ken?" He said, "I've been hit." So this Lieutenant Ron Ulf, he said, "You lucky bugger," he said. "You'll go back home, you know, or go back for a rest or something." But this Lieutenant Ronnie Ulf, he wasn't lucky at all, because he was the officer who got buried under the castle wall. And up to date, they're still buried under. And when I was out there the year before last with an American film company, up to that date, they had not found any remains. They hadn't moved the wall at all. But they are rebuilding the castle, so hopefully there'll be some remains recovered. And when they are, they'll be given a military funeral. And their names will be put on a plaque on the castle wall when it's completed. Our days were up there, we lost heavily. We had casualties. They were terrific. You get about 11 or 12 go just like that. It makes a hole in the platoon and the company. They realised that there was no further chance of our battalion doing any more attacking, because they'd been slaughtered so badly. I know the firing stopped for a while. I won't commit myself and say how long. The firing stopped for a while, and it appears that, because the Germans have put in several attacks, and they almost took the castle again. But their Vickers machine guns, who were in a good position, they done a wonderful job in Puglard fire, and they must have slaughtered many, many Germans so that the attacks, but none of them was successful. But I have spoken to a German who was in one of those one of those attacks, and they were going to attack with flamethrowers that morning, but that never materialised. In the afternoon of, it might have been the 17th of March, there was two German stretcher bearers come over under a Red Cross flag. And it appears they asked could they have a truce. There was this I found out not long ago, that Major General Beckett, or Major General Beckett now, it was Major Beckett who was out of C Company. He was the only officer left out of C Company, and he was the only officer out of two companies left. The others are all gone. And there was a Gurkha officer in the castle, because some of the Punjabis, and there were some Gurkhas got up there as well with us. Everything got muddled, really. But it appeared that this Gurkha officer, I think, could speak German. And he conversed with them, and they got back to battalion headquarters, where Colonel Noble was, and it seems as though the brigadier was in the dugout in the quarry at where that was battalion headquarters in the old quarry. And they passed a message on, could the firing stop? And apparently the firing stopped for a very short spell, and the Germans come out, they'd gone back and with their message, and they came out and they collected their wounded and any other wounded about there. We'd got 14 or 15 German prisoners in the castle. They all volunteered to go out with our stretcher bearers from the inside the castle and collect up the wounded. They brought in Indian, New Zealand, Gurkha, British. Didn't matter nationality, didn't come into it. They just brought them all in. The only one who wouldn't go out was a German sergeant major, or the equivalent of a sergeant major. He complimented Major Beckett on the defence of the castle, the way he put the defence up, even with the minimum numbers. And he handed Dennis Beckett his because they were the first parachute division who were fighting against them, and he handed his gauntlets to Major Beckett at the time. And he told me he had them for a long, long time, years afterwards, and then suddenly they disappeared. But I won't commit myself and say how long the firing stopped for. It wasn't long. Long enough to get a lot of these wounded in and get them treated. And the stretcher bearers what were in the castle and the MO, they done a wonderful job treating these fellas. The rest of the battalion, some of B&D, they were over on Hangman's Hill. And the chap who lives up the road now, Nutty Hazel, he'd already got the DCM for bringing in the wounded Gurkha in the desert. But he carried out major surgery, really, from his stretcher bearer's kit bag, tool kit, and he got a bar to the DCM. Regimental Sergeant Major Rose, for getting the ammunition up to us in a sandbag at a time, he got a bar to the DCM. Can I put him?